Coming to you from an underground bar in coastal South Alabama, I'm your host Roy.
And I'm your host Ben.
And these are sea stories from the Coast Watchers Club, where we chat with you about tiki culture and history, bars, drinks, music, and movies, anything related to Polynesian pop.
Welcome to this week's episode of Sea Stories from the Coast Watchers Club. This week, we have our first guest of the podcast, Allison Shepherd, with us. Allison writes the Beer and Loathing column for Mobile's Lanyap paper. So throughout the episode, we'll talk about the factors that led to the modern tiki boom and compare it to the rise of the original tiki movement. But first, let's talk about the cocktail of the week, which is the Archipelago.
Hey, Allison, what's up?
Hello.
Enjoying the drink?
I am. It's so good.
All right. It's, as Ben mentioned, it's the Archipelago, which is an original cocktail that I came up with for the recent pop-up event that we did at the Elysian Bar in New Orleans that we mentioned in the last episode. That version was a little lower ABV, but this version, I kind of boosted the alcohol a little bit to bring it back up to typical tiki standards. And I specifically chose this one because this will be on our Mobile Tiki Week menu, which... I guess this episode come out?
Yeah, that will week be probably a week before.
Week before, perfect. Yeah. Okay, so if this sounds good, you know, you got a little bit of heads up on what's in it and what it's like. So
it's kind of scary that there's more alcohol in this because you can't really tell.
Yeah, no, it's well hidden. But we've got a few dashes of Angostura bitters, a little bit of sweet vermouth. I used Cocchi Teatro, Dopo Teatro, which is a real rich Italian vermouth. We've got coffee liqueur. I used Kahlua. It's definitely not the best on the market, but it's pretty much what we can get here, what's readily available to us. We got a London Dry Gin. I used Beefeater. It's a good solid London Dry. It won't break the bank. Lemon, passion fruit, simple syrup. And to top it off, Braided River Summer Crush, which is a locally brewed sour beer with passion fruit and sea salt, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Allison actually works at Braided River.
On Braided River. Yeah.
Part-time. So it's just light, and the beer gives it a little bit of effervescence, so it's... It's kind of a long drink and, you know, it's real easy sipping.
Yeah.
You know, not too heavy or syrupy or anything like that.
I mean, these are kind of like my go-to drinks sometimes. They have like either, you know, a beer or a sparkling water like on the top or a club soda just to kind of give it, you know, some bubbles a little bit.
Yep. It's refreshing. Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. Because a lot of tiki drinks that don't have that can tend to be a little heavy on the stomach after a couple. So you have something like that to liven it up. It's good on the palate and the stomach, I believe.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I had four or five in New Orleans and didn't have a hangover. So
yeah. Well, no promises with this version.
Well, when you wake up at 4:30 in the morning, sometimes you don't, you know, you skip that.
Oh, right. Sure. Yeah, you skip it. Yeah. So I guess a minor detail we might ought to mention is our new setup. Obviously, this is a very ever-evolving podcast, so we're trying to get a little bit better at little things here and there.
It's basically a $50 fold-out table instead of us like laying back on the couch and not speaking into the microphone like I was just doing. We have a table now with the podcast microphones kind of directly in our face instead of kind of laying back.
And yeah.
Being a little too casual about it, I think.
One step forward, but also one step back because it's clearly picking up a lot of room noise, too.
Yeah. Hopefully you guys won't hear that with the editing software, but we'll see.
It seems very professional to me.
Oh, thank you. We appreciate that.
I don't know any better.
I know this is not your first podcast, so...
The guys asked me to bring a set of headphones for the board here, and I had to pull out a pair of iPhone headphones circa like 2015 because I do not have headphones with a jack.
Yeah, who does?
You know, this thing does have like Bluetooth on it. Didn't think about that for headphones. We'll have to test that sometime.
I don't trust it.
No, I don't either. Well, now you heard her voice a couple times. We'd like to introduce Allison Shepherd, who's our first guest of our podcast. That's kind of what we've been waiting to do. And now that we had two episodes under our belt, we felt comfortable bringing in a guest.
What an honor we've bestowed upon you.
Yeah.
I'm so honored. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
So
glad to have you.
Yeah, glad to have you. Tell everyone a little about... I guess kind of like your resume.
Like, why are you here?
Sure. Why am I here? That is a big existential question that I don't know if we have time to get into. But, you know, I guess my bio is I grew up sort of close to here, close to Coast Watchers Club World HQ. Mm-hmm. And then I moved away and went to school and had my career, and sort of what I became known for was beverage writing. And I was an editor at Playboy magazine, and I actually used to do like our Best Bars in America coverage and spent a lot of time traveling all over the country, all over the world. I sort of had an encyclopedic knowledge of bars that were opening. Anything that was new, I knew about it. It was like my job to know about that.
Right.
And then, you know, I was really proud of my work that I did there. I actually was a finalist for a Tales of the Cocktail Writer Award. And then I left probably in 2018 to do my own project and move back here. And I started at Lanyap as a beverage writer. And I'm also an editor there a few years ago. And so I do that. And also I'm a bartender at Braided River Brewery, as we mentioned earlier.
As I know.
Yes.
From personal experience. I'm there every once in a while.
Just a few times a week. All right. Well, I think that kind of explains the perfect subject that we have for you. And that is, why did this modern tiki boom come about? And let's compare it to the original tiki boom in the 30s, 40s, 50s. And what's different about it, and kind of, you know, what you saw being in your position during, you know, 2010 through 2000. Present day, I guess.
Yeah. This topic is super interesting to me just because of, you know, how tiki movements fit into also the cultural movements in the U.S.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we can talk about the original tiki movement. So Dawn, the Beachcomber opened in 1933 in California, right?
Right after Prohibition, yeah.
Right after Prohibition and during the Great Depression. So it was very much a escapism sort of place for people to go and escape economic anxiety, you know, all kinds of anxieties that come with the Great Depression. And then it grew from there, like Trader Vic's was inspired by him. Roy, correct me if I'm incorrect about anything.
No, he straight up ripped him off.
Okay, yeah, yes. Yeah, and
almost immediately, too.
And then got the contract with Hilton and popped it in every in the world.
Yeah. You know, and so like that original movement, it sort of grew from there as an escape from the daily life, escape from the news. You can transport yourself to somewhere new. Then we talk about like the 40s, 50s, 60s. This was post-war when GIs were coming home. They had experienced the South Pacific. So they were bringing back like all kinds of stories of what was going on there and even more idealism about this region. And it was also like an economic boom time. So it was very different from the 1930s version of why people were at tiki bars. Mm-hmm. And this was also a time of just complete fascination with the South Pacific. Sure. Hawaii became a state. South Pacific musical.
56 Hawaii? 59.
I did write this down.
Yeah.
The South Pacific musical was big.
Yeah.
Elvis's Blue Hawaii movie came out. You know, it was just like the aesthetic sort of dominated the culture at large. And instead of it being an escape from certain sort of economic anxiety, you could think of it as being an escape from... It was a time when economics were booming. Mm-hmm. Everyone was working hard. It was a go, go, go time. It was the space age. It was progress. Okay. So you could think of it as a time when people were trying to escape progress even.
Right. Right.
So they just wanted to be able to kick back and think, I don't want to work right now. I don't want to constantly be thinking about being, you know, struck by a nuclear bomb or whatever, or like robots or anything like that. Let's just sit back and dream about the South Pacific and drink strong drinks.
Oh, yeah.
Well, okay. You got to think also like the soldiers that came back.
Yeah.
They come back and are doing regular jobs. They're mechanics. They're, you know, starting companies, working in an office. That's a big change. And want to have a little bit of, although it was pretty traumatic for a bunch of them, but still like the good parts of it.
Right.
And to kind of step into that atmosphere again.
When you're surrounded by war on the Eastern Front, like constantly, and you get that little bit of R&R on a South Pacific island.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all you want to remember. So some of it's probably a little bit idealized in their minds, I would imagine. But, you know, and it's certainly idealized in the bars. You know, these are not like real accurate representations of Fiji or you know, any other Bora Bora or whatnot. So, yeah, there's all of that that's coming into play.
Yeah, rum certainly did not come from the South Pacific.
No, of course not.
And then tiki sort of fell out of favor in the late 60s and 70s. It was a time of, you know, people were looking for convenience. Mm-hmm. They were looking for, like, club drinks.
Yeah.
They were looking for, like, super easy stuff to make and drink and move on. Tiki drinks were complicated. The recipes were often kept secret.
Yeah, and the secret holders were dying off or retiring, and they're not passing that on to new generations of bartenders.
Right. And so fast forward a little bit and we get to like the early 2000s, which was the speakeasy time. It was like the reemergence of classic cocktails. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we think about it as a joke now, but it was like the mustachioed bartenders, the mixologists,
right,
consider themselves that, but that was like brand new. Like
they
were really taken by that.
And there was a reason for that I think a lot of people probably overlook. Cause like you said, it's real easy to joke about the, mm-hmm, you know, kind of overly serious bartender of the mid 2000s into the early 2010s with the vest and the mustache and all that stuff. So like you said, the previous generations were used to these, like, just for lack of a better term, shitty bars and shitty drinks. So, mm-hmm, to change the customer as a whole, to change their mind about what constitutes a good drink and a good bar, you have to put on an air of seriousness to, like, convince these people that this is a serious thing, and this is a serious craft, and then we should be taken seriously.
And worth the money.
Right, and it's worth the money. So you have to give them the experience that they're paying for. So
yeah.
And luckily, over time, that's kind of, like, gotten a little more casual, and now craft cocktails and high-end spirits are kind of the norm. So anyway, rant over.
Oh, well, I was just going to say that, you know, and I think that we were exposed to that for probably a decade,
mm-hmm,
before the modern tiki movement really took off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can compare it to the original and say the 2010s, well, 2008 was the recession. So there was a feeling of economic anxiety.
Sure.
But was also a feeling of, you know, iPhones were everywhere, social media, 24/7 news cycle. It was like just constant anxiety and you can't turn anything off. And I think that was one of the reasons why people were drawn to tiki as an escape, yet again, an escape from the news cycle, an escape from blah, whatever. But, you know, you can also think about it. People didn't put their phones away when they went into a tiki bar. They were taking photos. So I don't think that's the full explanation. But I do think that it was sort of a manifestation of the fatigue of the craft cocktail movement of the 2000s. And, you know, of, you know what? I don't want a 3-ingredient drink. Give me something that has 20 ingredients. I don't care. Give me as many garnishes. Give me a banana as a dolphin, please.
Yeah.
Give
me something lighthearted.
Let me have fun. I don't want to sit and be very serious. I don't want all the lights to be, like, I don't want to.
I don't want to contemplate my drink for, for 20 minutes.
Just have something and have fun.
Or even be, like, nervous about ordering.
Right. Like,
bartender going to think I know what I'm talking about?
Right.
You know.
And then you look at a tiki menu and it's, like, colorful pictures or fun things to say, like, painkiller, Mai Tai. Yes, I'll take it. And you don't feel, right? I mean, of course, you can feel uncomfortable at any kind of bar. And you can feel comfortable at the speakeasy bar still. But it's just, as a whole, it seems like people can relax a little bit more at a tiki bar. And I think that is what brought about such a boom,
mm-hmm,
you know, in the 2010s. You know, it just caught on and just exploded.
Yeah, one thing I want to add too is, and, you know, I definitely wasn't a part of that boom. You know, I just recently started getting into this. But I've also read and looked at, you know, what people like Beach Bomb Barry, he found those recipes mm-hmm. that weren't available and made them available easily. Like, even I have the Total Tiki app, mm-hmm. which, you know, for $10, you download it and you have every tiki drink ever made on this app on your phone. So if it made it easier for that movement to kind of come yeah, about.
It was, know, a lot more accessible because of the internet or because of apps. And
like you yeah. hear bartenders say all the time, my drink is a take on a drink that was a take on another drink that was a take on another drink. You know, it's just, it's always moving, but you have those base recipes that he provided everybody.
Mm-hmm. Where were you in 2010, Allison?
Was in New York City.
So did you ever make it? I was trying to think of like some of the early iterations of the modern tiki bar, not the ones that survived kind of the downfall,
right?
Or that were like, you know, Florida Tiki or whatnot, beach bars. One of the earliest ones that I could kind of think of and uncover, Painkiller New York. Did you ever make it over there?
I did not. No.
I don't think I've ever spoken to anybody that has.
Does it still exist?
No, okay. I don't think it lasted all that long, but I had some of what we can now consider kind of legendary bartenders of the modern cocktail era working there. And it seemed like a pretty cool spot. I've somehow got my hands on their bar Bible, which has all their specs on in it, you know, for every drink that they ever featured, plus all their versions of the classic cocktails. And they did a lot of tinkering with these old recipes. And it's like, why does this drink have 6 ounces of pineapple juice when 2.5 will do, you know, that kind of mm-hmm. thing. So they kind of put a modern mixological spin on these classic cocktails.
Yeah.
With new ingredients too, newer, fresher ingredients, you know. Oh, cool. So
yeah, I actually went to a bar a lot called the Zombie Hut, which was like very close to where I lived in Brooklyn. And the only garnishes were a cherry maybe yeah. on a drink. It was just like very
green or red?
Red.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever had a green cherry.
What about Otto's Shrunken Head? Did you ever wander over there? I think they've been around forever. That's another New York sort of tiki bar, but you don't go there for the drinks. It's a dive bar. It's cool though. I thoroughly enjoyed my time there.
The only place I went in New York was, I think it might have been on your recommendation, was the Polynesian.
Oh, okay. The Times Square one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does not exist anymore.
Yeah. And I was glad I got to go when I did. It was kind of weird because it's in a hotel, but it's in like a cube hotel or something like that.
Yeah, it's something like that.
It was like almost in Times Square. It was a fancy hostel, basically.
Yeah, okay. Right.
You got a really small room, and I want to sit, maybe the Pod Hotel or something like that. And then, like, you walk in the lobby, and then you see like some bamboo and some pipe and drape like blackout mm-hmm. curtains. And just a girl sitting there, and she's like, oh, your reservation, here you go. And you walk back, and I can't remember the guy's name. Brian something was the...
Miller.
Brian Miller.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the drinks and food were phenomenal. The service was really great. That was probably one of the best service. Like, our waitress was amazing. She was really cool. And, like, she would kind of just, like... It was just me and my sister, and we were just kind of hanging out. And she would come and sit down and talk to us and stuff like that. It was really cool.
Yeah, I went there in February 2020, like right before the shit hit the fan. I think it was a pre-Mardi Gras, like, getaway. It's like, let's go decompress before, you know, the shit hits the fan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So me and Tasha and our good friend Caitlin went to New York and bounced around, mostly drank. We did some sightseeing, but we mostly went to these bars that I wanted to go to. And my buddy Pat, who I went to a Wild Turkey, like, kind of bartender getaway type of event, he worked there, and he got us reservations at the bar, and it was a great experience.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they weren't busy that night, so got to hang out with the bartender and, you know, talk drinks and talk shop and all that good stuff.
That's cool.
It was fantastic. Yeah. Well, it's no more.
Yeah. I haven't looked, but I knew he was...
They never reopened after COVID.
They were trying to, but I think they had something in the works. Of course, you know, they say that about Tiki Cat and a bunch of other ones as well. But who knows if they'll ever open back up. But
pour one out for all the great bars that are no more. There's a lot of them. It's tough out there.
Yeah. Wish I had more travel money before before the pandemic.
Before COVID.
Yeah.
In February 2020, I was in Disney World. Yeah. It was like our last thing.
Yeah.
It was like when we first heard about COVID and we were like, should we be worried about this?
Yeah, that's where we were too. You know, it was like...
Yeah.
You're just starting to hear about it a little bit, you know, and Yeah, definitely some slight anxiety creeping in.
It was.
Yeah.
And it was like, and I remember making a joke about it on like my Instagram picture. I was like, only here to get coronavirus. And then of course it was like, oh, that was so stupid.
Yeah. Slightly poor taste, maybe.
Very poor taste. I should actually delete that right now. I'm going to go into my account.
You want us to delete that little segment too?
I will not edit that out. And then I was coming back from Cincinnati at a Red Robin in Nashville when I kind of first understood that, because they were like, here's your menu after we wiped everything down. And like, you could tell that they were like cleaning everything. And my nephew was with us, and they had a little game console at each table, and he was like pressing things, and like, every time after he did that, they would wipe it down and stuff like that. It was crazy.
Well, this quickly devolved into a
where
were you conversation? Where were you
conversation?
It's so only like, natural.
I was looking and I looked at some articles that you had done, and I wanted to ask you some questions. First of all, I saw you did Cincinnati. So how was your trip to Cincinnati? This is just like a personal question.
That was fun.
That's my city.
Yes, I did do a trip to Cincinnati. It was fun. There's a bar that's themed after Red Rum. What am I thinking of?
The Shining.
Oh, the Shining. Yeah. Yes, there's a Shining bar, which is really fun.
Yeah.
That one's cool.
What year was that? Do you remember? Like 2017?
It might have even been before that. I think I came back here in 2018.
Oh, okay. Because a friend of mine from elementary school, shout out to Kiki, he opened a Japanese beer garden sushi bar and restaurant in old paint factory in Over the Rhine. And like, I was looking for your article to see if you had gone there, because I was like, man, that'd be a small world if you did.
You know what was so interesting there in Cincinnati is that they had a lot of old churches, and what they would do is convert them into breweries.
Yeah, the Taft Brewery.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it was just like a gorgeous space, and they just had a lot of open space, and plenty of people want to open breweries. Yeah. So they're opening them in churches, and they're just gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah. Taft Brewery. Shout out William Howard Taft, president from Cincinnati.
Was he one of the good ones?
I think he's made it clear through history without any problems.
Did he die in the bathtub, or is that something else?
There is a beer with him in a bathtub, so that might be that might be true. I don't know his history that well. So, but the brewery, Taft Brewery, has some really good. They had a key lime sour that was amazing.
Yeah.
So, what was your like favorite city that you like? Who had the best drinks of like all your articles or?
Oh my gosh, you're putting me on the spot.
I know.
Here.
It's hard. I didn't give you this question. We got some more questions later on.
You did give me a list of questions that I prepared for very thoroughly, but I did not prepare for this. Oh, I don't know. I mean, some cities just have so many bars.
Like,
I mean, New York and LA are just, it's hard to go wrong.
That's an easy
There's just
answer.
So many options. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
I was going to say Mobile.
So what if you narrowed it down to what was your favorite diamond in the rough or like unexpected surprise? How about that?
Oh my gosh. Like a city I didn't think would be cool and they had good drinks.
Yeah.
This is going to be a lot of dead air because I'm just
I can edit out the dead air. This. Yeah, don't worry about that. it'll be like you answered it right away.
Yeah. Or just maybe like a specific memory that like pops in your head.
I will say. Orlando surprisingly has cool bars.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you think of it as a tourist destination,
but
there are a lot of people who live there.
Yeah.
And, you know, who work in the resorts and the places. And, but there's like cool cocktail bars. There's tiki bars.
Yeah. The Aku Aku is down there.
There's a famous drink called the Tiger Fucker. And yes, I am the first one to use the F word on the podcast.
I win. Is that at the Aku Aku? That's in Orlando, right?
I think it's at the Aku Aku. Yeah. I haven't been there yet.
Is Suffering Bastard, is that Orlando
as
well?
That's another one, yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool. Shout out to those bars.
Yeah.
We'll get down there someday. It's not that far from here.
I'm down there a lot, so I'll probably be there before you know it.
All right.
Let's just move right on into the questions. So I'll give you the one. You want me to, the one I haven't given you, you want me to wait till last?
Is there a surprise question?
No. Well, the one I told you at the beginning.
Yeah, you can do that one at the end, sure.
Okay. So the first question, and then we're gonna try to use these questions. We may change them per guest, you know, to tie in a little bit more into what they are, experts in. But the first one is, what is your favorite tiki drink? Cocktail. I always say drink. I mean, yeah. Cocktail.
Honestly, anything with banana liqueur. I just like, if it has banana in it, I want it. Like, I understand it's very artificial, but
like
I
we're like, talking like 99 bananas, uh-huh, banana liqueur. Uh-huh. Okay.
I just like love that artificial banana flavor.
I actually kind of like that shit.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a trash product, but it's kind of good. I'm also typically not a fan of artificial flavored banana, uh-huh, stuff, like banana runts, banana Laffy Taffy. I hate that shit. Terrible. But I like 99 bananas.
Yes. I just love that fake banana.
I think I might get a bottle for the bar.
Just for one house.
Yeah.
I'll just take shots of bananas.
Yeah, I don't have them with me, but there's one of the first years we did Haberdasher Tiki Week. We had a drink that had 99 bananas in it. So now, typically when we go for banana, there's a product by Giffard. It's a Brazilian banana liqueur. It's high end, you know, but it's really good, but it does not, if that's what you're looking for, that's where you got to go. It was 99 bananas.
You do have to do 99.
Yeah, so not 100.
Rum Runner has banana in it, right? Banana liqueur. Am I correct in that?
Put me on the spot there. It's like one of the quintessential drinks, and I'm completely drawing a blank.
Yeah, but nobody, I mean, that was like the 70s drink that made it through as a
brew. Right, drink, that's know? What I was about to say. Like, yeah, that drink has been, you know, bastardized time and time and time and time again. That, yeah. Like, I don't even think about it.
Well, I'm going to say it is because I think it.
Sure.
I saw, I
think if you
I
say it is, it's in there.
Yeah, why not? Okay, next question. What is your favorite tiki bar that you've been to?
So when I think about favorite bars, I think about, well, I'll say the Tonga Room in San Francisco is, I feel like, the last bar I went to where I was genuinely like amazed. So if you look at photos of Tonga Room, there's a pool in the middle of, mm-hmm, the room. You cannot swim in it, unfortunately.
I think there's a big fine if you jump in.
Probably.
Yeah.
And there is a floating band. They're on like, mm-hmm, a raft maybe. And I think that maybe there's a, it might be a thatched hut that they're on, but they're a band, yeah, and they play and they float around in the pool and there's like tables all around. I feel like that was truly, I was like amazed, and I hadn't had that reaction to a place since probably like the Venetian in Las Vegas, mm-hmm, where, mm-hmm, I'm just like a little kid. I'm like, whoa, how did they do this? How did they make the, you know, a river in the middle of a casino? Yeah. Anyways, but the thing about Tonga Room though, it's hard to get a drink. It's hard to enjoy yourself. You're like shoulder to shoulder. So
I heard the food wasn't that great.
Yeah, I don't think I even got any food. I was struggling to get a drink. And yeah. I mean, the experience was not great. But I will say, like, it's just a beautiful place.
The
and
awe factor.
Amazing. Yes, it has a huge awe factor.
Yeah.
So what about, like, for drinks? Now this is putting you on the spot.
Now you had your answer. Spot. Good dead air.
Always got to have a backup.
I mean, Latitude 29 has great drinks.
Okay. Yeah. That's a...
Fair enough. Yeah. Couldn't agree more.
Okay. So what's a tiki bar that you haven't been to that is like next on your list? Like, I want to take a trip just to go to this tiki bar.
Well, one bar that I've been meaning to go to, Roy, back me up on this, is the Zebra Bar.
The Zebra
here,
Club?
The Zebra Club. Yeah. The Zebra Club here. Yeah. Is it still open?
Yeah, it's still open and has barely changed.
Uh-huh. I haven't been there either.
Can you describe it for
people? Yeah, yeah, I'd love to. It is, you know, a tiki purist would definitely, you know, shoot it down as a tiki bar, but it's kind of came from that same 60s era tiki like just wave that was smashing over the country, where every small town had at least one, and Mobile had a few, and that was one of them. You know, whether or not it's pure tiki, let's just not even talk about that. But the reason that it's unique is that it has a like an African Saharan theme, lots of zebra print everywhere, and murals all over the place, headhunters, and lots of old, you know, artifacts and stuff like that. And it's amazing. It's an amazing space. It's historical. It's been there forever. It's got a great back patio. I think we're struggling, and I want to say the 80s, and very briefly turned into a strip club. And so if you go in, you, neither of you have been there.
Yeah, so I haven't been there.
When you finally make it, we should probably take a field trip.
Yeah, field trip.
But when you go in and you walk through the door, immediately to your right, if you look up, there is a formation on the ceiling that's kind of in the shape of like a grand piano. And that is, if you think about that formation on the ceiling and duplicate it onto the floor, that is kind of like this a stage from that era of when it was a strip club.
Yeah.
You can clearly see where there probably was a pole, like, yeah, right down the middle of it. It's just, it's a gym, and it's a, just a dive bar. You're not going to get a good drink there, but I love it. Go get a High Life and a shot.
High Life and a shot.
Yeah, and last time I was there, me and my buddy Nick Chambly spied an old dusty jar of pickled eggs behind the bar.
Oh, geez.
Yum.
And we asked the bartender, you know, how much for a pickled egg? And she looked at us like we, you know, I don't know. Like, I can't even think of anything more, anything vile enough to even, like, compare it to. But so she was like, I don't even know. Like, I'm not going to charge you for that. These things are disgusting. So we're like, all right, we're game. Let's do it. And she wouldn't even like scoop them out. She gave us the whole jar and the spoon and everything. She's like, you guys do this yourself. It was truly one of, I'm a pretty adventurous eater. And it was one of the most disgusting things I've ever put in my mouth. And ever. So,
do you think it was because of the time that it had been sitting there, well, or the fact that it was just pickled eggs?
Both.
Yeah,
I mean, these commercial pickled eggs, these full size chicken eggs. You know, we're not talking. I love the little quail eggs. Like, those are great. But these are full size chicken eggs, and yeah, they probably had been back there since the 80s. And the taste was pickled egg. Not that offensive necessarily. It tastes like vinegar essentially. But the texture, like, I didn't know something could be like simultaneously chalky and dry and mushy and wet at the same time. And
the whole spectrum.
I don't remember if we split one or if we both just, like, you know, chugged the whole one. But it was awful. And then a few weeks ago, same friend, we were in Milwaukee at Walski's, which is a pretty pseudo famous dive bar up there, neighborhood dive bar. Every bar is a neighborhood bar in Milwaukee. They had pickled chicken gizzards, and we went for those as well.
Oh man!
And they were just as bad. So you know,
you need to take my dad on big trips with you. He'll be right there with you.
Yeah,
he likes pickled pig's feet. What's his?
Oh man, those are gross.
Yeah.
I've done that too.
All right. So next question, which you kind of maybe already answered this, but if you have a different answer, what is your favorite memory at a tiki bar?
Yeah. You know, the Tonga Room was just like an awe-inspiring thing. And then, but I feel like at most tiki bars, I drink a lot and like do not remember them at all. So I have no answer.
Okay. So by default, the Tonga Room,
yes,
since you couldn't get a drink there.
I was sober, unfortunately.
Worst and favorite memory.
Because they wouldn't serve me alcohol, yes.
And then this one, I didn't think I had enough questions, so I kind of grabbed this off of, I did a Google search of like podcast questions.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of, you know, made it more towards our podcast. But if you could serve or drink a tiki cocktail, I would say, for you, if you could drink a tiki cocktail with any historical figure, who would be the person, what bar, and what cocktail would it be?
Okay, I don't know about the bar, but I would like to serve Jesus a painkiller.
Nice.
Nice. Excellent.
Thank Good you. Answer. I did think about that a lot.
That's like a song.
Yeah.
Serve Jesus a painkiller.
Yeah.
A Jimmy Buffett's not his next greatest hit.
Give us credit, Jimmy.
I want royalties.
And then the last one, which I told you before, right before the podcast, is what is your favorite tiki mug?
So I actually have a shelf at our house that's all tiki mugs. And I do have one that I ordered online from a vintage store. And it's Ernest Hemingway's head.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like literally his head. And it's cool. Yeah. I like it.
I saw that on your bio online. And so I was
on
like,
my website.
So that's
yeah.
why I kind of knew what the answer was going to be. So that's why I was like, I can add that question right there. All right. Well, that's all the guest questions we have for you. You made it through. Good job. Well, that's going to be it for the episode. We want to thank Allison Shepherd for being here. And
yes. You're number one, literally.
The first guinea pig of our podcast guests.
Thank you for having me. hope I didn't ruin it and for the rest of your guests.
Never. And you're welcome anytime. If you just want to come hang out on a Wednesday we're recording, you're welcome to come.
And,
crash the party.
Be a third co-host if you'd like. Next, we want to mention that from August 22nd to the 27th.
Correct.
Is going to be Mobile Tiki Week here in Mobile. Got a bunch of hotels here if you're out of town and want to come hang out. It's how many bars do we have?
There's 13 or 14 bars and restaurants.
14 bars breweries. And restaurants. They're all doing tiki menus. It's going to be all week long. They have, you know, some are doing trivia nights. Some are having DJ dance parties. You know, all different kind of parties going on. And then is there going to be a end of like Saturday night party at Haberdasher?
Yeah, just like always. This will be our ninth year in a row. Do the little luau, the week-ending luau at the Haberdasher with the whole roast, you know, whole cooked pig and that.
Nice, yeah.
Gets a little rowdy in there towards the end.
It's going to be a good time. So if you're around, drivable, you know, come to Mobile for a couple days. I like going during the week because it's not as crowded and I'm not big on crowds. But
I mean,
I'll be there Saturday night too. But
yeah.
I'll be there every night. Be honest. I think I'm going to get a hotel room and just work out of my hotel room.
There you go.
And then party at night. And
what a romantic notion.
Yeah, we'll see how that works.
Yeah.
I'd like to go ahead and thank Spike and the Hula Girls for providing the music for our show. You can listen to their music online anywhere and watch Spike on his YouTube channel where he has Spike's Breezeway Cocktail Hour. It's a great show where he makes a different cocktail each week. And has some crazy guests on there. It's a really, really great show if you're a YouTube watcher like I am. Also, I'd like to thank Matt Wagner with Nutri Rodeo. Always helping us out with our podcast artwork. He's working on some t-shirts for us. Always helping out with us. And so go check out his work and all his t-shirts at thenutrirodeo.com. And then be sure to follow our podcast and leave a review. Kind of, you know, let us know how the new sound is. If it sounds worse, sounds better. If you like having guests, if you just want me and Roy to talk all the time.
I've ruined it for everyone.
Just kidding. And then make sure you visit our website at coastwatchersclub.com. We'll soon be getting, I said this last week, but we'll be getting some pictures, kind of be doing some blog posts about different trips we've taken to tiki bars recently. And then I'll be getting a blog about our launch party that we had now. I think it was a month ago, so procrastination. We'd also like to thank our friends and listeners that came out to that launch party. Again, thank you for supporting us. And then give us a like on Instagram at Coast Watchers Club. And if you're interested in sponsorship of the podcast, send us an email at info@coastwatchersclub.com. Again, that's info@coastwatchersclub.com.
Mahalo, y'all.